It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Fresh siding is a great way to freshen the look of your home. It can also be a great way to improve energy efficiency. And it's expensive and involves making a lot of different decisions. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today to walk us through our options and to try to simplify that decision-making process. Of course, later on, he'll also be answering your questions about your home improvement projects. Bill, welcome back.
Oh, thank you. And so the fresher, you throw those clothes dryer sheets, those good smelly ones on there.
Is that right,
you
dryer
rub
sheets.
Them down. Yeah, that's
all right.
That's it.
A great, yeah. Great piece of advice. Little pro tip there.
You know, most people don't talk about that kind of thing.
So, I mean, I think a lot of us, when we think about putting siding on our homes, we think about putting the same kind of siding that we already have on our homes.
Right.
So what should we be thinking about when we make that decision-making process?
Well, you know, you've got to look at a budget, and you have to look at what some people don't think about is, in certain areas where we live in Iowa, you know, there's certain covenants that you have to adhere to. And very first thing you want to do is look around the whole neighborhood and first see what they have. So you don't want to go real radical, you know, and really change it up because you may be violating a covenant, which...
Yeah, so read your homeowner's agreement.
Yeah, and I always think, well, big deal. What are they going to do, throw you out? You know, but that's me. They probably would. But
that's why you do not live in a place with a homeowner's
association.
That's
why they threw me out by the correctional facility. Short walk.
All right, so make sure you know what you're allowed to have.
Right. Make sure you want allowed what you know what everybody else was kind of having. Usually they have to be a certain color as well. You know, like a lot of times they went with more like a wood tone. You know, nothing, you know, that really sticks out.
Tan and taupe.
Yeah, tan and taupe, you know, the boring stuff. But the biggest thing I think a lot of people look at is expense. Because, you know, this is a big investment. You know, sometimes, you know, you may be talking $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 depending on your house or more depending on what you choose to put on as siding or cladding that goes on the outside of your house. And then you also have to look at, well, what am I replacing? You know, am I pulling something that can just be upgraded possibly? You know, sometimes people will replace vinyl siding, which is the least expensive of pretty much all of the sidings, because they don't like the color. But they do make paints and finishes for vinyl. And so that you can change that color. Or just cleaning it up or freshening up, like you said, it's amazing what a good wash down on vinyl or steel siding or even, you know, painted siding, how much that improves or just touching up maybe just the trim work, you know, all the highlights where you may have, let's say, a taupe colored and you have an offsetting color or color that complements it off to the side for trim work, just freshening those up or recoat there can make a huge difference. And a lot of times people are looking at it from curb appeal. You know, what possibly they may be selling, or they just want it to look good in the neighborhood and upgrade it. And sometimes that may be all it takes as well. But if you're going to, you know, pull off the siding, especially, you know, let's say a house that's built in the 60s or 70s, there may be the old Masonite siding, which, you know, had a 12-inch reveal. So every board would be roughly 10.5 inches that you would see. And it's just starting to get soft and degrade and fall apart. That's very easy to take off. That doesn't take much time. But the problem is if it's an older home and you might have, say, asbestos on siding behind it. Well, if you hire someone, well, then they have to be, you know, licensed and bonded to handle asbestos. If you want to take it off yourself, you can. But there's still a lot of, you know, restrictions basically you should follow. As far as, you know, personal protective equipment and dust, handling of dust, and how do I get rid of it? How do I transport it? And sometimes that may be almost as much, especially with the old asbestos, as what your siding may be. So you want to get a contractor in there that, you know, basically focuses, you know, specializes in siding to maybe help you make those decisions. But most people have been picking vinyl, you know, mostly because it's price. And it's amazing, you know, back in the 70s when it first came out, you know, it was kind of the next step down the road from the old aluminum siding that we used to put on. Now, aluminum was a good siding, except that, geez, hail damage. I mean, it was just beat the heck out of it. And basically, you know, even lean on it and it would dent. But But the problem we had with aluminum siding and some of the earlier steel sidings is they looked good. Yeah, they weren't the best for hail, but what we put on the house underneath it, we ran into some issues. We were putting aluminum foil basically on craft paper behind it. And, they thought, well, it'll help reflect heat, radiation and all this. And they were way off on that. But actually what it did is trap moisture. So then we started to rot our houses. So they kind of backed away from that, using that behind it. But now the newer vinyls and the newer steels, what really makes them attractive to people, I think, is just not the siding itself. It's the detail work that they have, the different types of corners, the different type of trims around the windows, the fretwork or the detail work. You could basically do the old Vic, you take a pretty plain farmhouse style, and someone that has a lot of design background can turn it into almost like a Victorian, all this fretwork and design that has the very low maintenance accessories, and or where you'll see possibly they call them brackets. It looks like big 4x4s coming out and helping hold up the roof, that you can get all in vinyl and or covered with steel. So that's what makes them attractive, I think, is there's very low maintenance. It's so many options. And you really see a lot of it now when you go down the road. Just start looking at some of the new subdivisions. It used to be just, okay, they'd pick a light yellow, let's say, and it was all, like 4-inch showing. And it was kind of bland. But now, they highlight with, it looks like, like shakes or wood shingles, but they're actually vinyl and they're a different color. And, they'll throw some cultured stone, which has its own set of issues. We've learned that, we were putting them on wrong for a lot of years. But it just the highlights and the colors, just even doing that of putting some cultured stone on the front or say under, if you're like underneath a picture window or in an entryway or some, small sections, even those small areas like halfway up or a third of the way up your garage door, just that alone makes a really big difference.
So vinyl is usually the most cost-effective.
Right.
There are a lot of options. What's the downside of vinyl? Because you're not a fan.
No, I'm not a fan because I don't know, maybe it's just my mindset. I just don't like something that I can't change. I mean, I'd like to be able to, if I want to paint something down the road, I can paint it. And I know you can paint vinyl. But to me, it just doesn't seem like if you're building a beautiful house, it's just like, okay, I'll throw that off for a few years and then let's put the real stuff on later. That's kind of the feeling that I get. It's kind of like a cheap raincoat is what it is. Some of the downsides, it does move. It expands and contracts a lot. And a lot of times it's put on wrong. And there, it seems like I harp about reading directions, but what driving down here, I always look at when I'm going through certain areas, I look at siding, and when I look at vinyl, it's wavy. And the reason it's wavy is because it was put on wrong. Vinyl siding and steel siding hang on a house. They're not nailed to it. They hang. So when you read the directions, the nail isn't supposed to hold the siding against the house. You should be able to go out and grab the vinyl and move it left and right. And if you can't move it left and right, if you ever have a problem, warranty, the company isn't going to cover you. It has to move. Same with steel. It expands and contracts when the sun, it's just that's what happens. And it's usually put on wrong because people are hurrying and they drive it too hard. We're so used to just driving, and carpenters, we just drive a nail, bam, and it has to be held at least a 32nd of an inch away so it can move. and I think it's not the vinyl's fault. It's just it's put on wrong, and then it looks bad. And so then, it looks cheap when it starts getting wavy. And the same thing with steel. And
so let's talk about steel.
Yes.
Steel is more expensive.
Yeah.
There are a lot more varieties of steel than there have been in recent years.
Oh, yeah. And I love steel siding because the maintenance is very low. And when they came out with seamless steel siding, they used to sell it like in 12-foot long pieces, and they still do. But you have all these laps. That's the thing with vinyl and steel siding when you buy them in 12-foot lengths is there's this lap. There's always this joint. But with seamless steel, I mean, when it's done and it has the right when you have a craftsman put it on, it is just gorgeous. I just love that. And the good thing about it is the less seams, the less chance of moisture getting behind. And steel and vinyl are natural, natural basically exits for water. Whenever because siding lets water come in like crazy. That's why there's required to have a weather resistive barrier behind it, like a house wrap. So when the water does go through these sidings, it either drains out the bottom through the holes or drains down behind it. And so they can be very good for a house in that aspect. I mean, they kind of keep it off during the driving rains, but yet any water gets behind it, it can just get out. It's not trapping it. And that's why a lot of times steel or vinyl was put on, because the siding was there, the paint was peeling all the time because the moisture inside came through the wood and it would blow the paint off.
I know you're a big fan of steel roofs because they last so long. Does steel siding also endure for a really long time?
It does. It does. And, both can be recycled, but it's really funny how few of us, and I mean us, when we work with vinyl, recycle the vinyl. It can be, but to find the place that will take it, sometimes when you look, especially when you're looking at every penny, a lot of times when you're building homes. And so it may not, you'd love to recycle it, but if you've got to drive 100 miles to recycle a pickup load of vinyl,
you're not
going to do it. It goes to the landfill.
Right. Okay, we have to take a short break, but I do want to ask you before we get to the break, cement board was the wave of the future maybe 10, 15 years ago, and we've discovered quite a few problems with that.
Yeah, and there again, it goes back to application, weren't reading the directions, and it was a learning curve when it first came out, and it is a super product. I have it on my house, but you have to keep it away from wherever water can get to it, and I mean like water coming down on concrete and then bouncing back up if you didn't paint the bottom edge or if you didn't paint the ends of it. We've been seeing some issues, and I've been pulled into a lot of projects where they've had to rip off the bottom two courses because they're pretty, virtually destroyed because of water, and they didn't follow the directions.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. My guest is our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. We've been talking about siding, but Bill's also here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. With six race events, including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. He is ready to answer your questions about the home improvement projects in your life. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Bill, I said you were going to simplify the whole process of deciding about siding. I'm not sure that we've actually accomplished that there. So this is just a big project. You have to do your research. Do you feel like siding is a good do-it-yourself project?
Vinyl siding is a good do-it-yourself. And then the steel siding, when you buy it, from a lumber yard or, big box store or whatever, in the 12-foot lengths, it doesn't take very many tools. What's hard, though, is a lot of times you have to fabricate some steel. When you're doing steel or vinyl, you'd have to make the flashings. Like, say, you may want to wrap the wood on the existing windows with metal.
Right, and your house may have a unique shape.
You might have a unique shape, and then it comes down to, they have these small metal siding breaks. They're about 10 feet long that you can bend the shape whatever you want to make to go around anything basically, and so you're going to have to find a friend or hire somebody to do that. But it's usually the cost is in, like, they call them J channels, F channels, the starters, all of the ancillary pieces other than the siding is what really shocks you when you look at costs, like the metal that comes over the fascia board that goes, like, say, behind the gutters or wraps over any other wood. Those start to add up pretty fast. I mean, you can wrap up $400 or $500 in no time on the metal. And usually, even if you do vinyl siding, a lot of times on the garage doors and the windows, they'll use metal to wrap around those rather than buying vinyl. And so, other than that, you're looking at just tin snips and some saws. But measurements. I mean, you if you goof it up, I mean, you might have to buy a whole nother 10 or 12 foot piece. So if you've had some experience or find a friend that's done it, or the manual's usually, you know, the instruction sheet's usually pretty good, but you're probably going to end up getting someone there that's done it before to help you, especially to do the break. And it's some people will just come over and bend all the metal for you and just charge you for that and move on. But be prepared that when you look at, they usually sell it by the square, which, or the piece, because they try to make it not sound so bad. But the square is like 100 square feet, a 10 by 10 area. And when you look at the price, sometimes it may end up being double that or more. And then, you know, then you're looking at some other labor issues. But what happens, though, when you tear off the siding, you inevitably run into other issues, like where do, when I run down onto a roof, okay, how do I tie the two together? How do I, you know, shed the water, you know, off of the siding onto the roof properly? Or running into a chimney or running into stone. So it's a good do-it-yourself project, but it's a better a second person kind of thing to be a helper. Or you can put all the siding on, let somebody else do all, you know, around the windows and doors and all the trim work. That may be the spot for you.
Or right, even, and volunteer to help a friend before you do it on your house.
You know, that's a really good idea. Yeah, goof up on somebody else's place always is a good idea. It is. But it isn't that hard, so you really shouldn't get, all worked up about it. If you can get someone that has done it before, or like I say, a carpenter might just one carpenter, you don't have to hire a crew. They might be willing to come over and help.
All right. Well, let's get to some questions. And of course, Bill will answer your siding questions if you've got them, but he'll also answer your questions about the other home improvement projects.
Except wallpaper.
No wallpaper questions today.
Okay. Not today.
All right. let's go to Gary on the line in Urbandale. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Charity. Hi, Bill.
Hi. How you doing?
I'd like to get your opinion on powered attic ventilators.
Okay.
I've got a couple. One of them stopped working over the past couple of months. I took it out Friday and was looking up where to buy a new one, and ran into a couple articles that said that they may be a waste of money.
I'd get rid of them. I was glad to hear the one quit. That saves the taking a shotgun out and shooting the thing off your roof.
That is not the recommended method.
Oh, I guess you can't do that in Urbandale. I'm sorry. Right. I'm used to the smaller towns. we used to think they were really a good thing, but then we started, you probably read a good article like from buildingscience.com or something where.
That's it.
Good. Because when they go on, you know, to get air into the attic, it has to come from somewhere to be able to go out that vent. And especially older, you know, real old homes, they didn't have any ventilation like any overhangs. And so the only place to get the air was through all the air leaks in the ceiling of the house, you know, the floor of the attic. And it was sucking all of your heat energy, or in the summer, sucking all your air conditioning and running it out. And I, in some of my presentations, I have some really, really good slides of an attic ventilator in the middle of the winter. And, of course, there's no snow around it because it's all warm air coming robbed from your house, and it's heating up the roof around it, and then icicles hanging off of it. And yeah, I would get rid of them, but you still should have some sort of attic ventilation, you know, either at the ridge, you know, and hopefully at the overhang, the soffit area.
Yeah.
And then
we do have those.
Oh yeah. Then get rid of them and patch them in.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're going to save a little bit. Yeah. I've always worried about them also as a fire hazard. You get, if they aren't working correctly and all of a sudden you get, some critters up there or birds, and then it stops the fan somehow, and then all of a sudden it heats up, and I'm just nervous about them. So that's a good thing. I'm glad you quit.
That's a huge help. Yeah, me
you
too.
Bet.
Well, thanks for the advice. I appreciate it. It's
you
big
bet.
Help.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call, Gary. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This one's from Tom. He says, is radon mitigation a DIY project?
It can be. There again, you know, you can go to the Department of Health or State of Iowa, but I've always felt that it was. You can buy the kits. It's a lot of times if you have a existing home and you're not building a new one, You've got to look at, okay, where am I gonna put the fan, because it's a pressurized system, and how am I gonna get the air that I'm trying to circulate from underneath the basement slab? How am I gonna get that into the pipe and to the fan, and then outside? And in many cases, it's not a do-it-yourself, because a radon mitigation specialist knows where to run, let's say, the fan, whether it's going to be in the attic. Sometimes it's the outside. Sometimes it's in the basement. And they know how to run that pipe from wherever you pick it up out of the slab through the house and then out. You just can't, I think sometimes what do-it-yourselfers will do is, let's say they'll put a hole in their sump pump lid, and then they'll suck the air out of the sump pump, and then they'll just run it out between the floor joists right next to the ground. And that doesn't really help a whole lot, and it's not recommended by the EPA or Department of Energy. So it should go all the way up and, past your roof or out the roof somehow. In a new home, a lot of times that can be done by yourself because it's all open, while you're framing it. But in many cases, it is a better thing to have a radon mitigation specialist do it for you, unless it's a real simple application. On the older existing home, usually it isn't. And they usually have, if the fan in the system is going to be on the outside, they have some covers that just make it kind of fit in, basically, like we're talking, freshen up a house, because the last thing you want to see is this big old ugly pipe on the outside of your house and a fan. And that's done usually by do-it-yourselfers. And I mean, talk about curb appeal. I mean, I would swear that knocked 10 grand off your house right there. But yeah, if it can't be a real simple run, then I'd get a radon mitigation.
Call.
Yes. And we're really lucky here in Iowa. We have some really, really good radon mitigation people.
All right. Here's a question from John in Eastern Iowa. He says, about 30 years ago, I had new vinyl siding put on my house. Then a year or so later, it started to bubble on one side. A siding representative came to my house and said that the bubbling was caused by the sun reflecting off windows that were at a right angle to the siding. I thought this was a scam and tried to work through the corporate system with my complaint, but I gave up. 5 years ago, I talked to a local siding guy, and he said he could replace the siding, but he wasn't sure the bubbling would not reoccur. He replaced the siding, and it bubbled again. What can I do to resolve this problem? Is there any film I can put on the windows to reduce the intensity of the sun?
I've seen this, and it's it almost, when he says bubbling, it almost looks like you put your charcoal grill right up against the siding, and it kind of warped it and bent it, and the one that I saw that was really striking is you could actually see the curve on the house of when the sun would hit the neighbor's window, and then it reflected, and it just basically burned this mark right into the side of their house. There are some films. What you'll want to do is get with the window manufacturer to see if that's not going, whatever brand you have, get a hold of them and ask them, because I'm sure they're familiar with it, because there's been plenty of lawsuits about it. So whatever type of coating you can put on the type on the window itself, on the outside face, that isn't going to affect the performance of the glass and maybe cause glass cracking. And because that has occurred when we put some certain coatings on the outside pane, that it actually causes a difference in movement, and then the glass actually cracks. So
steel siding wouldn't bubble.
It could take the paint. The siding wouldn't, but it could bake the paint on it and actually cause it to possibly bubble or change colors.
Planting a tree, is that a good plan?
Yeah, put shutters over the window, something. But yeah, there's going to have to be something done. Or what some people have done is they put like a wooden fence. Right out, just a decorative fence to cover that section of siding, so that you still have the siding, but yet, just the wood is getting warmed up and it's not going to. And now I'm thinking of a magnifying glass, and burning the wood too. But
right.
You could put a coating, but check with the window manufacturer first.
All right, let's go to the phones. Linda is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Linda.
Hello. Thank you so very much for taking my call.
Sure.
After our recent rains in May, I've been having some water issues in my basement. They've been kind of long time coming. I live in a century-old house with a clay tile foundation, and I've noticed that the water comes in often through the walls, you know, where the joints and the tuck pointing. I did some tuck pointing on the inside, but of course I knew that wasn't going to do the trick. This is the worse on the south side, which is the low part of the yard. I've just gotten two estimates to get some work done. I thought that they were going to say to dig away the dirt and to put, you know, do tuck pointing and put the rubber membrane, but nobody is suggesting that yet. What the one estimate says they want to do is window wells, and then they want to put a 45 mil thick rubber membrane with river rock on the side of the house and build up the grade. They didn't mention anything about a drain tile to divert the water. But the other company says they want to put a new basement floor in because of hydrostatic pressure. And the difference in estimates is about $20,000. And I just, it seems to me one is more about diverting the water away, and I would still want to get a drain trench. But the other is more about once the water's under your house than to fix it. And I just wondered if you had any thoughts about this.
I would start off with the first one, the less expensive one, because in many cases, if you can divert that water, you know, at least say 6 feet to eight, maybe even 10 feet away by using that rubber membrane and then a creative landscaping, many times that will alleviate, you know, 90% of the problems.
Would I still need to get a drain trench then on the other side of the, you know, on the yard side of the rubber membrane just to kind of help the water along too?
Yeah, that would be very good, like a French drain at the end of it, sure, to take care of it and take it away. I would start with that one because that may take care of it. And then, you know, we've got to remember, do you have this happen every year?
Well, it's just been getting worse over there.
Years
like our May, it is getting worse, and so I do have to deal with it. And my slab isn't very thick because it's a century-old house,
sure.
But the water doesn't come shooting up through it. And then my other question is, if I do all this, and because they also want to put a sump pump around the exterior, people also recommend a sump pump, a perimeter sump pump inside the house.
Sure.
And then I'd also want to know, if I do a radon mitigation, should I do that before or after?
They can incorporate that right with it, with the new sump pump, because most of the new sump pumps will come with a lid that already has the basically the female fitting on the top of it, so you can just screw in the pipe for the radon, and it has another hole for the sump pump pipe, and then another hole generally for the electrical. And so that's the time to do it. That's, you know, that's what I would do, because I hate to see you spend, you know, going to all that messing with the floor right away. But because between the sump pump, because I don't know what kind of soil you have, if you have a kind of a good well-draining soil underneath your slab, between the sump pump and getting the water away from the house, that may take care of it, unless we have these super, super bad years, you know. But generally, that will take care of it. That's why on new homes, they really recommend that you have in the first 10 feet at least 6 inches of slope away from your house.
Right, because I don't have a sump pump now. It just all kind of streams towards the drain in the middle of the basement. So.
Okay, yeah, I would try those first because they're the least expensive, and you know you can always do something more later, but I would start with these first.
Great,
that's a good
idea.
I
love your show. I love what you do. Thank you so very much. You have saved my life so many times.
Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call, Linda.
Did you get that recorded, Charity?
I did.
Okay, good. That's what we start with every show now.
Okay, before we get to the break, I think we have time for one more short question from Greg in Story City. We don't need new siding, but we do need to wash our vinyl siding and aluminum soffits. What is the proper technique?
Well, if you do use a hose and not a pressure washer, because
we want to use the pressure washer.
I want
but
to
that's
too.
A problem, right?
And trust me, probably I will. But I'm just telling you, don't
do as I say, not as I do.
They're usually like a mildew side, and pretty much every store has them now. It's funny, in the last 5 years, you go in there and you say, okay, I need some siding cleaner. It's just a mildew side and a detergent mix, and usually you should use like a garden hose and try to get a ladder, or something to stand on, don't shoot upwards into the joints because that's how you wet the house, is shoot it directly like 90 degrees at it. And I know you can't with the overhang, but try to use a lower pressure and then a scrub brush, because I know everybody says, hey, I don't have to do all that with the power washer.
Right, but you're going to get water behind
your
siding.
But you're going to get water back there, and not to mention a lot of times that you're going to see on the inside coming through on somebody's windows, which is not good at all. So use a lower pressure and try to scrub it and use like a cleaning. There's all kinds of stuff on the internet, especially on how to clean it. But usually go to the store and they'll have a mildew side and detergent.
Okay. Just step away from the pressure.
Yes, step away.
Washer.
Yeah, don't do what I do.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and he's here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with six race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. You're welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Sue is up. Oh, sorry. Randy first. Randy is up next in Iowa County. Hi, Randy.
Hi there. Got a house, one story built in 64. The back bedroom in the northwest part of the house. It's colder than a well digger's blank in the wintertime.
Yeah.
How should I figure out whether there's any insulation in there?
Well, usually it's a ductwork issue, unless there's some insulation missing.
Need bigger ductwork then?
Well, it needs designed ductwork. Do you have a furnace person that you work with? I tell you what really works good is ask them if they have a duct blaster. And what that does is it's a hood that you put over the top of, say, where the air comes into the room, you know, the supply in the bedroom. And
right.
If he puts that over the top of it, he can find out that hey, there's something going on, either too many elbows or something's been dropped in the ductwork, or something's been crushed or has to be redesigned, or, yes, possibly, you know, a larger at the starter, maybe he has to flute it down to get more pressure. But you have him, you know, have him come out and say, hey, there's something wrong with my ductwork, because, you know, the house should be insulated the same all the way around. And, you know, in 64, you know, it's probably what, 2x4 walls, and it probably has 3.5-inch fiberglass in it, but, you know, maybe back then. Duct blaster. Have him start with that. And then because usually that's what's wrong. Or in the attic, if someone, put in blown fiberglass instead of bats of fiberglass or cellulose. It may have been blown by air coming into the overhangs. It may have been blown back away from the ceiling. And I've seen where there's 10 feet of drywall bare where air has come into the attic and then just kind of moved the lightweight blown fiberglass away. And so that may also be the issue. But I'd start with the duct blaster.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you much.
You bet.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Randy. Now it's time for Sue from Iowa City. Hi, Sue.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Thank you. I am getting gutters on my house. I have new gutters. Now, I have a very large roof, 90 foot long on one side.
Okay.
So, although it's a mid-century house, there's slope, but I get up and walk on the roof frequently, so it's not a bad slope. It's walkable.
Okay.
The question is, standard size gutters are 4 inches.
Right.
What about going to 5-inch gutters?
I would recommend going to 5. And in some cases on those larger roofs, they'll go to a commercial 6, depending on how many downs you're going to have, you know, coming down the downspouts. But in some cases, when you have a large roof like that, you know, it's you know, it really isn't that much to go up. A lot of times it isn't that much to go up from a 4 to a 6 because the labor is basically the same. It's just the cost of the materials, and you want to be able to handle as much water as you possibly can. That may be an option, but at least go to the 5s and then just make sure that they upsize the downspouts as well, because in some cases they'll put on the bigger gutters, but then they don't upsize, you know, from the gutter down to the ground. They went back with the little cheap 3-inch or whatever that comes off of the 4s.
I've encountered in talking with contractors.
Yeah. You definitely pay more for a good contractor when it comes to gutters, because how they install them, how they attach them to the roof, you know, because many use a bracket, some use gutter spikes, and it seems like gutter spikes, that every spring you go back up there and you try to knock them back into the same rotten hole. So, you know, a good gutter company is going to cost, you know, a premium, but you're going to have something that's going to last a long time, and it's going to look good.
All right. Well, Sue, thanks a lot for your call. Let's do a couple email questions here. This one's from Jake. He said he was interested to hear your thoughts, Bill, about seamless steel siding. That's what they have. And he said some of the issues we're running across are dealing with dents and reconfiguring some dots and windows to the outside. So we're needing to try to patch in the steel siding and running out of material, so we might have to patch with vinyl. Yikes.
Oh, doors and windows.
Maybe I couldn't figure that one out.
Yeah.
And he said, what are some ways to recycle steel siding if we decide to replace it?
Well, the recycling, you can just take it, you know, to your local
scrap
recycler,
metal, right?
Your steel recycler. I have a whole trailer load sitting at home right now of steel that I'm going to be taking.
And it's a great thing to recycle because they'll actually give you a little money for it, right?
You know, sometimes you're surprised at how much money you get for, you know, that you think is junk.
Right.
Aluminum would be a little better, but you know, that's the downside is steel or vinyl, you know, when you have to go back and, say, patch in, the sun has worked on it. So I'll tell people, you know, don't bother saving any vinyl siding thrown in your garage because after a few years,
it's not going to match.
It's not going to match anyway. So what a lot of people will do is they'll just go ahead and replace the whole side of the house or the whole end of the house. And, you know, when you go to the corners, it's really hard to tell the difference because it's usually shading and people can't really tell the difference, you know, but unless they really know. And that may be what you have to do. And in some cases, I know some people have gone back and had an auto body person actually paint siding because they can do so much better job and use the right products and use something that will expand and contract with the siding to match, you know, what you have. But trying to mix steel and vinyl together, oh man, yeah, that is just, it's just gonna look horrible. I mean, it is, I'm sorry, but
okay, so it's gonna look bad. Need to start over.
Yeah, at least do that one side. And I have worked with insurance companies before where, you know, like when there's been hail damage and dents from that, and they'll say, well, we'll patch in, and that's, no, you got to do the whole side. And then they'll say, well, you know, we'll come in and fix it, and then we'll power wash it. And I've just said, well, if you're going to power wash it, then I'm going to come back with a moisture meter and tell you what the moisture content is. And so we're going to have an issue here, so just replace it all and we'll be fine. And then usually that's what it is. So just keep that in mind.
Okay, put that in your back pocket.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of steel, this is a question from Michelle. We need a new roof, and our contractor will do whatever we want, steel or shingles. We're leaning towards steel, but he did say that if there would ever be hail, steel is difficult to patch if damaged. What are your thoughts about that?
Depends on the steel. Yeah, it is hard to patch, but most of the time the heavier gauge steel, like a standing seam steel, doesn't dent as easily. It might get some small dents, but it's like a car, you know. I mean, you're going to get some dents.
But it's up on the roof.
It's
you're
up
not
on the
really
roof.
You're not really going to see it,
right? Yeah, you probably won't see it, but, you know, still, you pay for insurance, and, mm-hmm. and you'll just have to replace it. And that's why a lot of people have gone with the steel shingle. There's a lot of different brands out there, but I swear you could drop bowling balls on those things, and it just doesn't damage them. I mean, they just are so durable, and the granular is, you know, is epoxy to that steel. I'm just a big fan, and it is a big price upgrade. But there's two major brands. One of them doesn't have a transferable warranty, and the other one does. So ask that if you're going to put on the shingle-style steel roof, is it a transferable warranty? Because it may not be a big deal now, but down the road that is, because it is a large investment.
Okay, and when it comes time to sell the house, you're...
Yeah, and they really look good. You still can see from, when you lay those down, they're in panels. So from one direction, you can see the seam if you're looking for it. But otherwise, I think that for Iowa is really good because we do get a lot of hail.
All right. Yeah. Here is a question. We didn't get through all the different kinds of siding earlier, and Patricia in Des Moines is considering two that we didn't talk about. So
okay. She
says, we're trying to choose between LP Smartwood and Hardy Plank. Can you help us determine which is best? Our home was built in 1992. So very briefly, what is LP Smartwood?
Okay, it's LP Smart Siding.
A smart siding,
yeah,
okay.
It's basically an oriented strand board product that it's the newest generation. And when you do a lot of research on it, again, when you look at the products, it's really has had very few issues with it. There again, you have to keep it at least 6 inches off the ground. The joints have to be at least 3/16 inches apart. Where it butts into things, it has to be at least, like say 3/16 or something. In some cases 3/8. So you read the directions and it's great. It can be, you can get it pre-painted as well as like the cement boards. I personally, I have the cement board on my house. I haven't painted it. It's been 16, 17 years. When they're put on right, you don't. But there again, just make sure that they're away from water, and me personally has nothing to do with anybody else. I really like the LP.
Okay. Now,
siding.
What about Hardy Plank?
Hardy Plank, there's a lot of different brands, Chemtech, Hardy. That's been around a long time, and it's a good product, a really good product. There again, if it's put on correctly. And I wouldn't put either one of them on a house without a drainage plane, a rain screen behind them. Their house wraps now have drainable type, basically a mesh. So behind the siding, when the water goes through over the laps or through solar heat gain drives the moisture through, and it condenses on the backside and runs down the house. There should be a drainage membrane there. I would never put it directly over oriented strand board or directly over plain house wrap. But that's me, because looking at the failures and seeing what goes on, you should have a little bit of space. There's a ton of products out there, whether they be a rain screen strips on every stud that hold the siding out, or a mesh, something like Home Slicker, or Tyvek and Typar have come out with a draining house wrap, and that's because they've had so many issues. And that's why my house haven't had to paint it. Sure, it's fading, but that's it. I mean, the siding looks like new. It's just faded
okay, so
paint.
So most importantly, you need to talk to your contractor about
right. Making
sure that there is that space.
There's a space. Yeah, there's a space. And it's not new. I mean, it's been around for 40 years. I mean, the first time I put a rain screen on was in 1989. And you talk with people, builders, I don't do that. Well, maybe we should be looking at it because that's what the industry is doing now. They want to keep everything dry. Basically, what you're doing is what they did in the colonial days. You're keeping the siding dry. And that's why siding lasted, 300 years in some of these houses, because there was so much air movement, they're so leaky. And that's what you're trying to replicate. Because anytime we trap moisture, it's a problem.
All right. Now, I don't know that you helped Patricia decide whether...
Well, I like the LP. Plus,
okay. They
make it in Minnesota. How's that?
All right.
That swings me there, too. But I like that one.
All right. Well, let's get back to the phones. Bill is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Good morning.
What's your question?
Great topic this morning. I need help. I have 30-year-old vertical siding. Kind of a plywood sheet, 4x8 sheet with a texture on the outside. It's done great, except the south side now is getting soft spots. It seems to be rotting in certain areas. Just looking for suggestions.
Yeah. Yep. I'm really glad to hear you say that, because that's the old Masonite vertical siding. And it has kind of it's either a groove or a little indent about every 8 inches or a foot, doesn't it?
Yes, that's correct.
Same thing. It's on my mom's house, and that was put on in 77. For some reason, that vertical stuff has lasted forever. A friend of mine, they've had it on the house since the late 60s, and it's held up. Now, since it's on the south side, I think my mom's is the same way. It's a little bit getting sketchy there on the south side of hers as well, now that you bring that up. So, you know, what you can do then is either put, you know, like hardy, you know, the cement board, any of the cement boards, but they make panels that look really almost identical to what this old Masonite board did. And so they're the cement board like Hardy makes a really good 4x8 panel that may be really good for your situation. And I would put a mesh behind it, a drainable house wrap behind it, which is, you know, isn't going to bring it out, you know, very much, maybe 3/8 of an inch.
I know it doesn't have that. We did one small patch above the air conditioner unit outside, and it seems to be sitting directly on top of about an inch thick foam insulation that has lining over it.
That's the way we did it back then. So we didn't know anything about rain screens back then. But, you know,
so if I change it, I can put a rain screen in. That's a good idea.
Yeah, you know, you could just put the drainage rain screen behind there, and you just Google, you know, just drainable rain screens. You'll see all kinds of stuff. But there again, you know, the vertical ones, either the cement or the LP or other products similar to LP. I'm not trying to push any, you know, names or anything, but some government projects, we use the Hardy, like the 4x8, 4x9 panels. Those things are have held up years, and they look like the day you put them on because they're up off the ground. And that's
well, terrific. I appreciate the information. Gives me that direction. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Bill.
Hey, here we go. I like that guy.
All right. Here is a question from Derek in Cedar Rapids. He says, I want to get Bill's thoughts on whole house fans, which I know you love to talk about.
Yep.
He says, we have an acorn deck house that was designed in the 1970s but built in the 80s. We have one and love it, except for all the cottonwood fuzzies that get stuck in the screens.
Yeah, I just the whole house fans, I'm not a fan at all. They were okay maybe back in the 60s or something, but take it out and use a design type of ventilation system. If you're looking for something that's going to bring in fresh air, look for a heat recovery ventilator or an energy recovery ventilator, and whatever your heating and cooling person prefers, or some bath fans. But, you know, upgrading your filters, getting the proper filter for your heating and cooling system, in some cases, that will really affect your cooling load because we've been putting the wrong filters and marrying the wrong filter with the fan that's in your heating and cooling, and we're not getting the performance we should get. But I think you would notice a big difference getting rid of that whole house fan, sealing it up airtight, I mean completely sealing it and insulating over the top. You'll notice a big difference wherever that is, how much cooler it's going to be in the summer, much warmer in the winter.
All right, and we'll see if we can slip in one more super quick.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. Is it effective or worthwhile to paint over spots of steel siding where the color, where the color coating is chipping or flaking due to sunshine?
Well, you know what? We were able to salvage. My daughter was able to salvage an old garage that had steel siding on it and had great big flakes coming off, and she went and picked up the primer that went. That worked good on the old siding and repainted the whole garage, and it's looking terrific.
Okay, so maybe.
Yes.
All right.
Yep.
Bill McAnally, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Charity, and have a good month.
All right. Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Caitlin Harrop, and we welcome Rick Brewer to the team today, our newest producer. We had production assistance today also from Camus Leeson. You never have to miss an episode of Talk of Iowa. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbie.